To number 30, Archive and History of Custer State Park Projects.
Yeah, we'll have Lydia Austin come forward and provide that item.
So, hi folks, my name is Lydia Austin. I'm the Interpretive Programs Manager here at Custer State Park, and I'm here to talk about a unique project that kind of fell into our laps a number of years ago. In 2015, we were in the process of building the new visitor center across the way, and if you haven't been there, you should go. But there's a park film there that does talk a little bit about the history of the park. And while doing that, we were working with a film company, and we needed to get some historic photos for it, and that's kind of how this project came about. As many of you guys probably know, this year's Custer State Park and Game Fish and Park Centennial. In 1919, we were passed as the first and largest state park for Game Fish and Park, and so we're doing a lot of celebration with that. And it's part of our history. When I started in Game Fish and Parks as a seasonal I'm going to move you guys so I don't keep looking. Sorry. When I started as a seasonal in the 2000s, I learned the basic history that you get. Chris, it's just... Sorry, guys. I learned the basic history of Custer State Park. We were formed in 1919, vision of Peter Norbeck, the governor of the state at that time. He wanted to get the park set aside. He pushed the legislation through it. We knew that. We knew that's how we started. As a seasonal, we learned, you know, the Great Depression happened, the 30s happened, and we had the Civilian Conservation Corps come out and do a ton of the infrastructure. Peter Norbeck, the roads, the bridges, a lot of our unique infrastructure was built by them. That's the staples that we knew. 1960s, this cool thing called the Buffalo Roundup happened, became a huge event. Then in the 1980s, our visitation really took off. That's where we started charging entrance fees, camping fees. And then we merged, and in 2019, we're celebrating our centennial. We knew the highlights of our history. We were comfortable with the highlights of the history. It was really an easy way to tell the visitors, but is there more? Was there more stories to be found? Like I was sitting at the beginning, we didn't walk into this project trying to find the more history. It kind of fell into our laps. We went in trying to find photos for the film that we had. In that 2015, I was looking for photos, and I found this old box in the basement of our park office. Paper box, I'll show you a picture of it here in a second. Opened it up, and it was the original letters from then-Governor and Senator Peter Norbeck to the homesteaders down in the southern end of the park, negotiating for lands. I know a little bit of preservation from working with the National Park Service, and I knew in my limited knowledge this was not where they should be. They were already starting to deteriorate. The mice had a good time with some of them, and we knew we needed to protect them. In our initial step when we thought about this, it was just protecting those letters. Let's get them into something that's going to make them so they're not falling apart, that they'll last for a while. Let's go with that. I had used a DAR grant. Hold on. Let me get ahead of myself. So that's the box that we found up there, you guys. And then we found more stuff on the sides as well as the commission notes from back then as well. It's kind of cool. So then I applied for a DAR grant. That's Daughters of America Revolution. We'd used it for the Badger Hole interpretive project, so I knew these folks. So it was easy to apply for that grant. Worked with Sue Brown and South Dakota Parks and Wildlife Foundation. She helped me out a ton. We got the grant and charged right in there to go start protecting these letters. Story got out there that we were protecting these letters. This is where we started hitting a number of challenges with this project. First of all, when you start saying you're finding history, people come out of the woodwork and start dropping history off in your office. If anyone's ever been to my office, it's packed full of history stuff. I have maps and everything tucked everywhere. Because once you create a depository, people start bringing it to you. So that was a cool part about this project that we started facing. We just started getting numerous amounts of stuff. And we started realizing we had too much stuff and we weren't realizing the capacity of what we were going to do. Okay, Chris, go ahead. And so with the STAR grant, what I was able to do is we started collecting everything. We took everything from the basements and the attics that we found. That's that bottom picture. I hired two great interns that are still working for me today, and we started digitizing everything. Our goal at this time was still to protect the items. We wanted to scan them, have them access to our staff, protect them. We hadn't quite hit the archives yet. That was going to be coming up. Okay, so this is when we realized Lydia's office is way too small. And so we had all of these items. At this time, Custer State Park attained the Star Academy. I took over the entire admin office and started moving everything up here. At this point, I went up to Matt Snyder, our superintendent, and said, can we start an archives in the park? And he was okay with that. The reason I wanted to start it within the park is we had collected so many items, so many stories, and so much just stuff that we realized we wanted to tell that story and keep it within the park. Once we started moving the stuff, other museums, such as the Journey Museum and the Sturgis Museum, contacted me and said, hey, we've been holding on to your stuff since the 70s when the Peter Norbeck turned to a visitor center. Can we give it back to you now? Because we're hearing you're doing an archives. And so we had to go get a ton of stuff from them. It was really kind of neat to see what they had. We found more items as we cleaned out the Peter Norbeck, the attic. We just started collecting items. And so, like I said, we moved up to the Star Academy. And this is, like, again, the theme of this whole project. We realized we were in over our head. We needed to get more. We needed help. As I said, I'm the interpretive programs manager here at the park. I run the visitor centers. I'm really good with giving programs and telling the public what to do. And I have a little bit of knowledge with history, so I realized I needed to start learning stuff. So I started doing webinars, looking at other grants we can do, and start training myself into protecting the archives. So it went from that mess that you guys started seeing up in the attic to this. This is our archive center up at Star Academy. We have our processing room over there. They'll process the items through here, we scan them, and then we actually historically archive them in what we're going to make a temperature-controlled room up there. So they go from being kind of all over the place to organized and protected throughout the rooms. So at this time in 2018, this is where I've been doing research, doing a lot of webinars, and I realized there is a grant out there called a Collections Assessment for Preservation Grant. This is an awesome grant. It's very competitive. But we went into it with a positive attitude, applied for it, and we actually got accepted. This was really cool what these guys do. They come in and they get two assessors. We had a collections assessor and a buildings assessor. And they came in and looked at our historic buildings, they looked at what we were doing, and they wrote a long-range plan for us. So what we need to do to continue to be successful at our archives. They were slightly horrified at all the historical items I had sitting in my office, but it was really kind of fun. We went to the Badger Hole, Mount Coolidge, Peter Norbeck Education Center now, and the Gordon Stockade and looked at these buildings. The Badger Hole really excited them. There's a ton of history up there. And so far, we've been taking really good care of our buildings, but they also wrote a plan on how to keep preserving our historical buildings. And so then we went into this plan so that we can start building our archives. So this is us kind of going all over the place. And looking at all the history throughout the park. So our plan going into the future is our archives are going to continue to grow. We do want to keep them in-house so that we can tell our story. As I said, we became a depository. We also became the knowledge throughout the park when somebody comes up and says, I have a story of my family. I was here. They knew who to call. I do get weekly calls. I just had one where their family was sitting around a kitchen table and they knew they had a homestead here in the park, but they didn't know where. And so they called me up and I was on a conference call at the family dinner table. And we were able to look at the maps and actually show where they were up in Bear Gulch and where their family was. And then I actually found the mining claims their dad had up there, their grandfather had up there. And we got to talk all about it. It was really kind of cool to be able to offer that resource to somebody calling into the park so they can make that connection to their family history in there. I do get items dropped off all the time. That one's really fun. I just got a whole photo album from a family who was downsizing, and their great uncle worked in this building when it was a gas station. And so I got a whole bunch of original building pictures of this building when it was a gas station. Just dropped them off. They didn't want them. They'd been sitting in a drawer for years, and they thought the archives could have them. So we took them. And then the other thing about it, like I was talking earlier, is like we get to learn names of our park. For as long as I was a seasonal here for 5 years, I've worked here permanently for 4 years, I knew Jolly Flats, I knew the courthouse, I knew Parker Canyon. I mean, we know those areas. That's where we round up the buffalo and go. But there's actually people behind them. Like, it was kind of fun to go learn the names of them. And I found out we had a sawmill down at the wildlife station who married into the Jolly family, and they had this whole family reunion down there. It was really kind of cool. So our goals in the future is to take that CAP grant and start working on what items we need to start preserving first, protect the items, get the staff, I hope to keep my interns here for a while. We started working with our local museums, such as the 1881 Courthouse, the Railroad Museum up in Hill City, the Journey Museum has been a ton of help, and just continue to learn our history. The other thing we have to do is what I learned in this project is what's happening now is history for 100 years later. So I want to build the archives so the things that we're doing now in 100 years, someone in my shoes isn't trying to build the archives again. So we saved all the stuff when we did the Visitor Center. We saved the stuff when we did the Peter Norbeck. And we're archiving those items right along with the items from 100 years ago so the stories continue to go and we can keep telling the story of Custer State Park. But that's the biggest thing is we want to do is we want to be able to tell that story and share it because a lot of really neat things happen with this park in this area and be able to pass it on. So thank you. Any questions?
Questions? Comments? That was really good. Thank you. So we are 31, right? 100 years of state parks.
Good morning, Mr. Commissioner, members of the Commission. Thank you for having us this morning. My name is Emily Miller. I am the Visitor Services Coordinator for the South Dakota State Parks, and I've got Lydia Austin, who you just heard presenting with me today as well. We are here to talk about the 100 years of South Dakota State Parks. As you guys know and have heard a bunch of times, it's 100 years of tradition in the state parks. We're celebrating 100 years of pheasant hunting and 100 years of South Dakota State Parks. Custer did become the first park in 1919 and therefore started the official overall statewide state parks program. So that's giving us a lot of reasons to celebrate this year. The 100 year theme will have a big presence in our parks this year, from programming to designs to promotion. A lot of this has already happened. A lot of it's already been done to promote the 100 years tradition, and we have a lot more to come. We'll be presenting you just a couple of recaps of the ways that we're going to be celebrating this year. I'd like to start with our major statewide promotion, which is just about to launch. It's a good old-fashioned scavenger hunt, but it has a technological twist to it. That's actually me and my daughter out there just kind of giving you an example of how it would work. The 100-year scavenger hunt challenges visitors to find five 100-year markers placed in each of the participating parks. Visitors then turn their phone around, take a selfie with that marker, just like we did up there, and they submit the photos online to enter into a drawing for each park's park prize package. Clues will be posted online and on posters at each of the parks. So it's very simple, but a lot of fun. Since it's such a simple program, both to do for our visitors and our parks, we expect a lot of participation. And the parks have really embraced the program as well. 30 parks jumped at the chance to host the scavenger hunts. They scouted locations, wrote clues, and then they partnered with local businesses for the prize packages, which allows the whole community to celebrate right along with us. The prize package complements each park's recreational opportunities. So for example, there's a hiking package at Adams Homestead, a kayak at Rocky Point, and an art print framed in wood taken from the Breastworks cabin at Oakwood Lakes. This promotion is a unique way not only to encourage our visitors to get out and get moving within their local park, but to encourage them to spend time in parks that might be new to them. The scavenger hunt markers and the clues should be up next week. We'll do a big push for open house weekend, which is May 17th through the 19th. We're gonna take photos through July and we'll announce the winners in early August so that folks can still have time to use their prize packages this summer. The 100 year theme will also give a boost to several programs that we already have in place. The first one is our Junior Naturalist program that encourages youth ages 7 to 18 to learn about the rich cultural and natural history of South Dakota and encourage them to be physically active outside. There are three levels that offer increasing challenges and awards, and this year to celebrate our 100 years, all participants will earn a special edition 100 year patch and certificate. Likewise, the Go Forth program will have a 100-year bonus to it. The Go Forth program is a partnership with the Department of Health where we distribute a free family daily park entrance license to every South Dakota student in fourth grade. It can also be applied to an annual license purchase, and the kids get a free equipment rental like a bike or a kayak. This year, the kids that redeem their passes will also be entered into a drawing for one of four tent camping packages, including an 8-man tent, sleeping bags, camping chairs, a cooler, and more. The passes were sent home through the schools in April, and we'll do one drawing each month from June to September. You'll see that history theme carried throughout our publications as well. The Conservation Digest Special Edition this fall highlighted a number of history pieces, including one on Custer State Park. Both the Park Times cover and the Conservation Digest calendar feature historic and recreated photos. The Park Times also includes a timeline of South Dakota State Parks and a summary of the 100th anniversary happenings. And you can score that 100-year look for yourself. We have a few selections of 100-year merchandise available for purchase, including clothing, hats, historic photo playing cards, and buffalo plaid tote bags. These items are for sale online and at select parks. Other items used to promote the parks this year will include t-shirts and bandanas, which I think you guys each got some last night. We've also got drink koozies and keychains, and of course we're going to stick with that buffalo red, black and red buffalo pattern that you've been seeing. And that plaid was everywhere this January when we sponsored the main reception at the Tourism Conference in Pierre. Conference attendees dressed in their best outdoor gear and networked with each other while playing cornhole, sitting around a fake campfire, and enjoying burgers and brats off the grill. The conference helped us to bring awareness and our message to other attractions across the state and encourage cross-promotion. This summer, we'll also be reaching other outdoor users through a sponsorship with the Expedition Baseball League teams. We did a sponsorship last year with the Pier Trappers that went over very well. This year, we're going to expand to have a presence at games for all three South Dakota leagues or teams in the league, which is the Spearfish Sasquatch, the Aberdeen Hub City Hotshots, and the Pier Trappers. So if you're able to catch a game, we'd invite you to come out and join us for some recreation-themed mini-games, PA announcements, and giveaways. The 100-year celebration has really taken off on social media as well. The hashtag MySDTradition continues to encourage people to share their outdoor memories and traditions on social media. Each week, our Facebook page features park trivia, giving clues or historic photos, which our followers can then identify to be entered in for prizes, such as t-shirts or water bottles. These posts go well beyond our normal followers. They reach an average of over 13,000 people each week. For example, our top post was Oahe Downstream, their bald eagles. That post alone prompted 204 direct interactions, so guesses, and then it actually reached over 17,800 people. So the message is spreading far and wide. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Images of the Past featured an episode highlighting the South Dakota State Parks history. They did a lot of interviews with department staff and found some archival footage. It premiered back in January, and if you haven't seen it yet, it is available to view online, and parks are going to get copies so that they can show them in the park for programming. So in addition to these statewide programming, parks across the state will be holding history-themed programs, activities, and special events. I'm going to give you just a couple of quick examples of some of the things that are going to be going on this year. Oakwood Lake State Park will hold a 100th anniversary celebration on May 18th. That's during open house weekend. They'll have speakers and firsthand stories from families that lived in the area. They'll also be celebrating the Mortimer Cabin, which turned 150 years old this year and recently received a renovation facelift. The day will end with historic cabin tours and pioneer games for the whole family. Pickerel Lake will celebrate their 100th year of state park and the park's 60th anniversary with games, crafts, and cake on May 19th. Lake Herman State Park near Madison will incorporate their celebration into their popular Loose Pioneer Day. That's on June 8th. Activities include rope making, butter churning, gold panning, spinning, weaving, and outdoor cooking with a Dutch oven. Families can also enjoy homestead games, homemade ice cream, and music by the South Dakota Fiddlers. Farm Island Recreation Area will host 100-year anniversary and pollinator party on July 13th. Guest speakers will discuss bees, butterflies, and the pollinator process. We'll take a group bike ride out to check out the pollinator plaque on site, and kids are invited to dress as their favorite pollinator. The park manager, Brandon Brake, even worked with the local Dairy Queen to provide ice cream sundae fixings and secured a kids rock band to play at the shelter. Fort Sisseton Historic State Park turns 60 this year and is celebrating both anniversaries with a 1860s baseball game on August 3rd. It'll feature Fort Sisseton versus the Colorado All-Stars. The uniforms, bats, and rules are all going to follow the 1860s guidelines. So if you're in this area, please stop by and cheer on our home team. And of course, it's Custer State Park that we have to thank for all of this, and they have a number of activities planned to celebrate their 100th. I'm going to turn it over to Lydia Austin, Interpretive Programs Manager for Custer State Park, and she'll tell you about the things they have planned.
So as Emily said, we are celebrating our 100 years. We will be celebrating many of the events with Game Fish and Park to celebrate the event here. A couple that I'm just going to breeze through within your packets. You guys probably got our flyer showing a lot of our events. Some that have already happened. On March 1st, we did do a celebration at the Maine Visitor Center celebrating when the legislation passed creating Custer State Park. This was a lot of fun. We showed films that we had found from 1947 tourism, showcasing the park, and we had a band playing, cupcakes, and we also unveiled our new display over there, which is a historic timeline taking you from 1912 up until the present. Along with that, we hosted a number of events going in. We will be using a lot of social media, same as Game Fish and Park. Starting off with the Tatanka Photo Contest, we got a lot of photos that people submit. And this one is going to be going at Open House Weekend. Next weekend, it'll start and run through Roundup. And we encourage folks to safely take photos of the park. And the prettiest one that we will find will be the front cover of our magazine for the Tatanka. And kind of backing up a little bit, if you haven't seen it, we did do a historical Tatanka newsletter for the summer that used to be historically a newspaper. And we went back to that and found old photos and mixed the new and the old, and it actually turned out really well as well. The other thing we'll be doing is a Custer State Park coloring contest for our younger visitors to the park. As with Game Fish and Park, we did revamp our junior naturalist program to celebrate the centennial. There's a special badge they'll get from the park. And then we also incorporated a coloring page that they can pick up and they'll put in for a competition up at our education center. We actually had a lot of fun designing this one and it turned out pretty good, I thought. 100 selfies in the park. This one's kind of, we got a couple self-guided ones. This one, again, we encourage folks safely to go out and take selfies in the park. And if they get 100 of them, we'll give them a rah-rah on our social media. We also created a photo strip that says My Custer State Park Tradition or My Game Fish and Park Tradition. There's a couple of them that they can hold up in their selfie and fill in what their tradition and what their unique experience at the park is. With that, we did the Custer State Park Trail Challenge, which they go and they collect rubbings from medallions we have in a certain number of our trails. And as well as the Custer State Park Poet Challenge. If you guys don't know, Custer State Park is home to Badger Clark, South Dakota's first poet laureate. He wrote a lot of poetry about the park. And we thought to honor one of our traditions, we should see if there's any other poets out there to add to that story and pass that along. We're also going to do something really fun this year. We're going to try our Custer State Park Summer Concert Series on every second and fourth Saturday throughout June, July, and August. Throughout the park, we are going to host small bands. We have them on Legion Lake Dock, which will be kind of fun. We have them at Bluebell Campground and Game Launch Campground. So we'll spread them out. You get to go out there, throw back a chair, and just listen to some music in the park. We thought that's a great way for folks to experience the park and kind of see it. How we see it. Along with this, on July 5th, we're going to do another celebration of actually when the park became a state park, not just the passing of the legislation that we'll celebrate with our visitors. We'll probably be down here by the Education Center, do cupcakes again, and just have another celebration. Along with around Gold Discovery Days, we're going to be doing the big Gold Discovery Days parade in the town of Custer, share with our local community, and we'll be doing a reunion with all past park staff at that time. Any questions?
Questions? Comments? That's great. Thanks.